Public address, Boston. Trinity Church, October 18th, 1979.
To friends of the Dharma.
Perfection.
And I'm very happy to speak about on altruism and perfection. And I want to thank the different Buddhist groups for making the arrangements.
Now, I'm very happy to be here amongst you as the same human being. Though there are some differences. I'm Easterner, different culture background. Our country also, something different environment. But these differences, if you look deeper way, then these differences are superficial. And deep down, we everybody, the same human. And also our feeling, feeling of I. I'm talking on conventional level. Just by nature, we have a feeling that I. That with feeling, we want happiness. I want happiness. I do not want suffering. That feeling is more or less nature is there. Now, since you see that feeling is same, all sentient beings in general, in particular in all humankind, the same feeling on that level. And we usually call as a human being. So, because you see all are the same feeling on that level, so we all have an equal right, equally. Everybody has the right to gain happiness, and equally we have right to get rid of suffering. Now here, this is suffering. Usually when we face suffering, when we face certain problem, tragedy, we immediately point it to outside. Because of this, because of that, I suffer. That sort of, you see, feeling attitude. Now from the Buddhist viewpoint, the suffering or happiness as a fruit or as a result, come due to our own verbal and physical action as a cause. Without cause, there will be no result. So you see, the result, happiness and suffering result created by our action. Action created by our motivation or our mental attitude or motivation. So, and also the mental attitude is something very influential when we passing through certain different experience. Now, for example, this is same, two person undergo the same kind of pain or you see physical suffering, something like that. Though you see the same kind, the both are passing through the same condition, yet one due to mental differences, mental attitude, differences of mental attitude, one may face, mentally, one person may have more, mental unrest and what you call the unhappiness, and other one, though physically, this same condition, but mentally, he feel much more happier. So you see here, it shows the mental attitude is something very important in our experience or in our life. So while we are making every effort to develop material progress, at the same time, equally important to develop inner strength or inner development. That is this mental right attitude. So you see, combine or join the material progress as well as internal progress, some sort of combination. I feel that is something right method to follow, right way of life. Through that way, we can gain more happiness. So, therefore, you see, if we just concentrate on material and forget inner development. Now here, for example, the United States country. Really, your country is beautiful. People on the surface, all the facilities are there. You are rich, generally speaking, though there are some people, yet generally very rich country, all the facilities are there. When we first met, they're very nice. Then you see, listen, deeper problem. Then you see there are problems, mental unrest. Underneath, under beautiful things, there are some mental unrest. Sometimes you see some kind of mental suffering is there. So it shows in human society, the material beautiful alone not sufficient. So here today, this present world, we are not lacking in science and technology field, but we are lacking in the field of inner feeling. So now here, when we talk about each religious, the philosophy, there are many different. Points or many things, but now the most important, all religious basis is, I think, love, the feeling of humanity, kindness. Now, these things are something very important. Not only it is something, Kasore. Something not a mere edge, a religious point, but in daily life, we need these feeling. If we have these feeling in deep down, we ourselves feel much happier. And also, it automatically create some some different atmosphere, real and the harmony and friendly atmosphere will develop. And that, I mean, the many people can enjoy or can share, can be happy from that sort of atmosphere. Without our inner peace, automatically, due to anger or hatred, the atmosphere become tense. As a result, everybody feel some uneasy feeling. So, therefore, the practice of compassion, kindness, it helps the in your own, in your own feeling, the real calm, peace will develop. As a result, other friends, other people also
can enjoy.
Can enjoy peace and the calm. Now, and also in, this present world situation, economic field. Now, country to country, not only country to country, but continent to continent, we are heavily dependent on each other. So, under such circumstances, we need a genuine cooperation or, common effort to solve worldwide problem. Not by threat, not by pressure, but by genuine sympathy to each other's problem and clear recognition as if all nations, all people are same brothers and sisters, and making common effort. Then I think some problem we can avoid, and at least some we can minimize. So from this practical viewpoint also, it is something necessary. And also, as a result of science and technology, we human beings now, made certain real, real powerful weapons. Now, one side, we develop these weapons. And other side, we try to every effort to control these weapons. Now here, it is absolutely right to control or to disarm these things. It is necessary, it is very useful. At the same time, short practical term, if we made a paper and sign signature, it is some kind of solution. But in long run, unless real solution take place here, the paper solution may not last long. So you see here, in order to achieve real lasting world peace, first, we must develop inner peace. Through anger, the peace is very difficult. Through jealousy, through competition, motivation, they equal, Dhanyam said, equal difficult. Through, motivation of clever, the cunning, whatever, cunning. Cunning, very difficult to achieve real justice. So you see, things are depend on our own inner motivation, inner feeling or inner thought. So it is from that viewpoint also, it is highly necessary to develop a right attitude. It's a warm feeling, inner feeling, inner development. So now when we talk love, kindness, There's no differences about religion. Even believer or non-believer, no difference. There are, you see, many good scientists who, not accept any religion, but at the same time, really, genuinely thinking about human future, the future of humankind, about population problem, about these, radioactive, and pollution, so this sort of, you see, problem. Many scientists who are really, calculated these, risk, and they express the danger, you see. So when we talk about genuine brotherhood and sense of brotherhood, sisterhood, and on the basis of love, kindness, here, you see, not much difference whether you accept Buddha or Jesus Christ or Muhammad, not much differences. As long as a human being, and as long as you have a feeling that human concern about others, as long as that feeling is there, the love and compassion is, more or less, you see, same. Same. So this is my main or usual thought which I express to you. And now here you see question, the we human mind. There are good thoughts as well as bad thoughts. Now you see good thoughts create a good result. Bad thoughts create a bad result. Or, in other words, happiness, good thought will develop happiness. Bad thought will develop unhappiness or suffering. So now these two thoughts, one thought on the basis of reason, the logic, and the other thought mainly due to ignorance. And the protocol, the kasta,
afflictive emotion.
I don't know now. Lepta.
Afflictive emotion.
Kasta.
Afflictive emotion.
So you see, that those thoughts which based on reason and the logic, if you further investigate, if you further think, it can become stronger and stronger, and ultimately it go limitless, you see, power, infinite development, can develop. The other side of thought, which basically based on the ignorance, then these thought, if we investigate thoroughly, then it cannot remain. Because basically it is based on the ignorance, which is no basis, no truth basis. So here, you see, it is worthwhile to make a good fight with, this good thought, bad thought. Even, you see, animals, small animals, can learn through, you see, training with patience. Now, we human beings, we have many good potential to train our mind, to train our way of life. So therefore, it is absolutely worthwhile to try to make control the bad sight and try to increase good sight. So this is I always believe, according my own experience, we can train. Sometimes, you see, people say these and bad thoughts, better to let out where? From superficial viewpoint, yes. But if you think more,
it's not something that can be used up, like there's a certain quantity, and if you let it out, it'll all go away.
So since it is come from our own mind, So as long as mind is there, these things, I mean, will come. So it is better to control. Can control. Now this, no. So you see, mental training or mental, because of the proper way,
mm-hmm. Proper mental training.
Proper mental training is important, and we can follow these training. So now I will say something about how to develop such mental attitude. Another word, altruism. Now I will explain through translator. If I speak in Tibetan, two good results. One result, I can better express or more thorough expression through Tibetan, and second, you can have a chance to listen about Tibetan language. Tadinda. Ta.
There are many different types of good minds. But the kind of good mind or attitude that I'm talking about is one when one is faced with whether to choose one's own welfare or others' welfare, one will cherish or choose others' welfare rather than one's own. It's not something that we can develop right away. In order to develop this strong wish or this strong ability to bear this strong wish for others' welfare, it's necessary first to have a special altruistic attitude.
This one.
In which one carries on oneself the burden of helping others. And in order to generate an unusual attitude in which one carries upon oneself the burden of helping others, it's necessary first to have a great compassion. In order to have a strong force of compassion in which one cares about the suffering of others and wants to do something about it, first one must have a strong sense of love in which a sense of love which finds a pleasantness in everyone, and like a mother for her only child, wishes to bring happiness to that child. In order to have a sense of closeness and dearness with respect to other persons, should train in the memory or in a sense of their kindness through using a person in this lifetime who was very kind to oneself as an example, and extending that to other persons.
Mm.
Since it is one's own mother in this lifetime that was the closest and offered the most help, one begins this process by recognizing other sentient beings as mothers. And to do this, it's necessary to know about the mode of procedure of rebirth. The final proof for the existence of former and future lifetimes is that one's own the final reason showing that there is rebirth is that one's own consciousness, which is a mere entity of clarity and knowing, must be produced from a former moment of consciousness, from a former entity of clarity and knowing. It's not possible for it to be produced from matter. What I'm explaining here is solely from the Buddhist point of view. I'm not trying to create any interference with other views. It's best for people to proceed along with their own system. What one needs is something that helps. And thus, one's consciousness must be produced from a former moment of consciousness. You can't posit a beginning to consciousness. Now, although the general and most subtle type of consciousness has no beginning and no end, there are other temporary consciousnesses, or there are other consciousnesses, some of which have a beginning, but have an end.
No beginning, end.
And some have a beginning and have an end. The subtlest has no beginning and no end. It's from this point of view that the reasons are shown for the existence of former and later birth.
So this is the as the basic theory of reincarnation, you see, problem. Many people ask me about reincarnation. Now, I usually told them, unless you study about the theory of rebirth, very difficult to explain about reincarnation. So, this is the basic theory of the reincarnation.
In this way, there is no beginning to birth. Thus, everyone in the past has had a relationship with yourself, just as your own mother of this lifetime has. Now, in order to train in such a recognition, it's necessary first to have a mind of equanimity. In order to cultivate a sense of equanimity, one first imagines in front of oneself a person who's very close to oneself, a person who is neutral toward oneself, and a person who is one's enemy. Then first one contemplates the indefiniteness of these three either helping or harming oneself. And through this one, and when one considers that there is no indefiniteness, that the one will at all times either help or harm, one develops a sense of equanimity and then extends it to other beings. And then based on this sense of equanimity or equality, one recognizes sentient beings as having been one's mothers over at some time in the course of lifetimes and engages in becoming mindful of their kindness. Then there's also an explanation of a way to generate a sense of mindfulness with respect to the kindness of others, not only when they were one's mother in the course of lifetimes, but even when they weren't. This is because most of the good qualities that we have are produced in dependence upon other persons. As I will be explaining later, the practice of the six perfections depends almost entirely on other sentient beings. Similarly, also in the initial practice of ethics, in the abandonment of the 10 non-virtues, these are all done in relation to other sentient beings. And also in our own lifetime now, all these many good things that we use and enjoy are produced by other people. Also, in order to become enlightened, one has to engage in the practice of patience. And in order to engage in the practice of patience, this can only be done in dependence on an enemy. Thus, enemies are very valuable. Therefore, Shantideva said that enemies are the best of teachers.
So it is, if you look your own experience carefully, then through with enemy, you can learn many things. The tolerance, as I mentioned earlier, and the strength, inner courage, determination, these things you can learn through enemy. And also through enemy activity, you can make closer to the reality. So you see, from that viewpoint, It is absolutely true. When we practice the altruism, the enemy is not something.
Enemy is not someone to be neglected or forsaken, but should be cherished even more. After becoming mindful of their kindness, one should think to repay the kindness of other beings. And then taking cognizance of these beings who are bereft of happiness and are beset by suffering, one should generate love and compassion. When one generates love and compassion, this is something from one's own point of view, but then the other beings are left still suffering. Therefore, one generates a strong determination to free those beings from suffering and establish them in happiness. The helping of others doesn't just refer to giving food, clothing, shelter, and so forth to others, but providing for them the basic causes of happiness. For instance, in society, we usually just don't give food and clothing to people. We also try to educate them so that based on their own education, they can take care of their own lives. Therefore, in the Bodhisattva practices, one doesn't just give persons material things to relieve them of poverty, but also teaches them so that they will know what to adopt and what to discard. In order to teach others what to adopt in their practice and what to discard in their behavior, firstly, it's necessary to know their disposition and what teaching will suit them. And secondly, one must know oneself the doctrines that will help them exactly as they are. Therefore, in order to help others, oneself must have a lot of capability. Therefore, as a branch of helping others, it's necessary to achieve enlightenment in which one removes all obstructions from objects of knowledge and one removes all faults in one's continuum. For a bodhisattva who is seeking to help others, the obstructions from among the obstructions to liberation and the obstructions to omniscience, the bodhisattva considers the obstructions to omniscience to be worse. And there are even cases where for a bodhisattva the afflictive emotions can aid in the helping of others. Now, in order to remove the obstructions to omniscience, which are the predispositions established by the conception of inherent existence, it's necessary first to remove that conception of inherent existence. Therefore, in order for a bodhisattva to be able to help others in a complete way, it's necessary to remove both obstructions, those to liberation and those to omniscience. The complete removal of the afflictive obstructions is called liberation. This is the state of a foe destroyer or arhat. But then the removal of the obstructions to omniscience as well as the obstructions to liberation is called Buddhahood. Therefore, the altruistic aspiration or the altruistic mind of enlightenment is a main mental consciousness which, aimed at helping sentient beings, seeks to achieve highest enlightenment. Now, in terms of the implementation of this good altruistic mind, there are the practices of the six perfections. Giving, ethics, patience, effort, concentration, and wisdom. There are three types of giving: the giving of resources, the giving of one's own body, and the giving of roots of virtue. It is the most difficult to give one's own roots of virtue, and it is the most important. When one has a strong sense of giving or dedicating to others one's own roots of virtue, one no longer seeks for any reward oneself. Even though giving can be engaged in by one who is selfish, the giving of a Bodhisattva is not involved in selfishness at all. Now, there are many different types of ethics, but with regard to the ethics of a Bodhisattva, the main practice is to refrain from or to restrain selfishness. The word for ethics in Sanskrit is shila, and it is etymologized as meaning an attainment of coolness. When one possesses ethics, one has a peacefulness or coolness to one's mind. Then patience. There is the patience of not caring about or not worrying about what an enemy does. Then there's the patience, which is the voluntary assumption of suffering. And then there's the patience of acting out the welfare of sentient beings. The patience, which is the voluntary assumption of suffering, is very important. It's not a case of oneself withering in the face of suffering, but serves as a basis for increasing effort in order to oppose the roots of suffering. Then effort.
준두 준두리야 아니 가소래 당구 때 가서 심술기야 시작했죠.
Effort is very important in the beginning in order to generate a strong will.
나란스 줄이야 대신님부 여시.
We all have the Buddha nature.
견더 테나 가소래 견구세 연된 군대 제투야지 규제야.
And thus we already have the substances through which, when we meet with the proper conditions, we can turn into fully enlightened beings. Thus the very root of failure in our own lifetimes is to think, useless or yeah, oh, how useless or powerless I am. It's important to have a strong force of mind, thinking I can do it. This not being mixed with any pride or any other.
Moderate effort.
One brings failure on oneself by, at the beginning, working extremely hard, working too hard, attempting to do too much, and then giving it all up after a short time. Therefore, it's necessary to rely on a constant stream of effort, much like the current of a river. And similarly, when one is meditating, it's necessary at the beginning to be skilled with regard to the length of the session. It's best to have short, clear sessions. Short, clear, and frequent. It's more important that the session be of good quality than that it be long. When one has such effort, then one has the substantial causes for developing concentration. Concentration is a matter of channelizing this mind which is so distracted now in so many different directions. A scattered mind doesn't have much power. If you can channelize it, it will become powerful, much like channelizing the waters of rivers into a dam and making hydroelectric current out of it. To channelize the mind, there's no way to do it from the outside as by an operation. It's necessary internally to withdraw the mind. This withdrawing of the mind also occurs in sleep. Therefore, what we're talking about in terms of concentration means that one has a withdrawal of the mind, but also a strong clarity of mind, such that strong clarity of mind in which one stays on the object.
아, 딱 들려야. 아니,
When one strives to achieve concentration, one can practice with an object of observation or without one. And even though it's very difficult, it's very beneficial to achieve concentration observing one's own mind. And to do that, it's necessary first to recognize the conventional nature of the mind. The reason why we can't identify the nature of the mind now, this entity of mere clarity and knowing, is that it is as if covered over by our own conceptions.
Therefore,
in order to identify the nature of the mind, one needs to stop thinking about the past and to not engage in planning any conceptions about the future, but in between that, to let the mind rest in its natural state and observe it. Now, this is a little difficult because the mind is watching the mind. However, it is possible to identify this entity of the mind, its mere clarity or illumination, clarity in its being an entity of mere clarity and knowing, if one the night before eats a proper amount and the next morning meditates early. And if you reduce the amount you eat at night, it will help your weight too. And just prior to to dawn, the mind is very clear. And then if you identify this mere entity of clarity and knowing of the mind and then sustain it, now, if the mode of apprehension of the mind is too heightened, then you will generate excitement. But if the mode of apprehension of the mind is too low, you will generate laxity. There's no way of setting on a scale how the mode of apprehension of the mind should be, how high it should be, how low it should be. However, if there begins to be a danger that you will be generating excitement, then you should lower the mode of apprehension. If there begins to be a danger of the generation of laxity, then you should tighten the mode of apprehension. What's needed is a moderation of these two.
Mm-hmm. 하장에 가서 로 어 전부 이어야 되지 전부 생각을 봐 세부 당장 전부 이어야 되지 그거야
What's needed are the factors of stability the factor of great clarity of the object and from the subjective side 그래 전부
전부 전부 쓰는다 그거
tightness
시장 alert 이어야 되고
very very alert
sharp 다 alert 이어야 되고
This is the mode of cultivating concentration. It's already 6:30 and wisdom is still remaining. Perhaps we'll carry on for a few minutes.
아니 다 싫어블이야 싫어 망구야래 싫어 망구야래 안다 들었다 또디 담에다가 싫어시죠
There are many different types of wisdom the meaning that's being explained here is the wisdom realizing selflessness
뭔데 다 지다 싫어블이야 내가지고 군소도가 싫어 내로지고 탄담도가 싫어 심신이 탄차왔다고 싫어 숨쉬
In general there are three types of wisdom the wisdom, the conventional wisdom realizing the five sciences, the ultimate wisdom realizing the mode of subsistence of phenomena, and the third is the wisdom of knowing how to help sentient beings. Now, I'm going to explain the wisdom realizing selflessness. Now, with regard to selflessness, it's necessary to know what the self is, what this self is that doesn't exist. Selflessness is not a case of the present non-existence of what did exist in the past, but it's something that never did exist. It's necessary to identify something that always was non-existent as non-existent.
So that in the Indusane, on a young Kayaraslam, 가서 그래. 담바르 메시 랑은의 두바 메시도 랑은의 두바 때베 아니 때베 괜찮니? 아니 용복이요. 차반기요.
Now what is the fault? The fault is that whereas things do not exist in their own right, we view them as existent in their own right and based on that view, we generate desire and hatred.
사든데 인도자네 담이 떠고 담이 미어지고
Thus, it is necessary to realize selflessness or that phenomena do not exist in their own right. So what is this self that doesn't exist? Self is a term that's used to refer to independence, to non-dependence. Something that exists under its own power. Thus it's necessary to examine every phenomenon all types of phenomena to see if they exist under their own power, to see if they're independent or not. If phenomena did exist under their own power, then when one investigated to find out what this object is that's being designated, it should become clearer and clearer.
For instance,
consider your own self or I. the I appears like from within our own mind and body. It appears in dependence on our own mind and body. However, if you search these places from which it appears, you can't find it. For instance, with regard to this podium, if one is not satisfied with just the appearance of the podium, but seeks to find out exactly what is the podium, if one searches among its various parts, if one separates out all of its qualities and so forth, there isn't any table left to be found. The fact that things are not findable under analysis, when one searches to find out what this object is that's being designated, indicates that the phenomenon does not exist under its own power. Once the object then doesn't exist objectively in and of itself, but does indeed exist. But even if under analysis I search to find the podium and can't find it, if I hit with my fist, it'll hurt my knuckles. Thus, its existence is indicated by my own experience of feeling. However, that it cannot be found under analysis indicates that it doesn't exist in and of itself. It doesn't exist objectively, but exists in dependence upon a subjective consciousness. That objects exist in dependence upon a subjective designating consciousness indicates that they're only nominally existent. Therefore, with respect to one's own I or self, when one searches to find it, it cannot be found under analysis either, and thus it only exists, there is just the mere I that exists conventionally. In the newspaper this morning, somebody thought that mere I meant the mere this I, not the self. Thus there is a big difference between the way things appear to exist and the way they actually do exist. Thus, for a person who is actually engaged in practice, it's important to engage in this kind of analysis and experience that, and then see how things appear and notice the discrepancy. And in this way, the self that's being refuted will become clearer and clearer. As much as the object of negation becomes clearer and clearer, so much deeper will one's understanding of emptiness become. And then finally one will ascertain a mere vacuity, which is a negative of inherent existence. For emptiness from among positive and negative phenomena is a negative phenomenon, and from among the two kinds of negative phenomena, non-affirming negatives and affirming negatives, emptiness is a non-affirming negative. Thus, when it appears to the mind, nothing will appear except an absence of such inherent existence. Thus, for the mind of a person realizing emptiness, there's no sense of I am realizing emptiness. And there's no thought, this is emptiness. If one had a sense, this is emptiness, then emptiness would become distant. Due to ascertaining such emptiness, afterwards, when one views phenomena, and since they appear to inherently exist, one has the sense of their being like illusions, in that they appear to inherently exist, but one understands them as being empty of inherent existence. When phenomena appear this way, then the conceptions which superimpose a sense of goodness or badness on phenomena beyond what is actually there and serve as a basis for generating desire and hatred lessen. Whereas those consciousnesses which have a valid foundation increase in strength. The reason for this is that the meaning of emptiness is the meaning of dependent arising. Since phenomena are dependent arisings, they are dependent and are capable of increase and decrease. And in this way, cause and effect are positable. Once cause and effect are positable as being valid, then it can be posited that bad effects. Bad effects such as pain and suffering and so forth, which one is seeking to avoid, arise from their causes, and if one abandons those causes, one can be free from suffering. If phenomena did exist by way of their own nature, they wouldn't depend on others. And if they didn't depend on others, it would be impossible to have cause and effect. And thus, if dependence is correct, then cause and effect can be posited. And if dependence were not correct, then cause and effect could not exist either. Thus, as the final proof for the fact that phenomena are empty of inherent existence, the reason that they are dependent arisings, that they depend on causes, is cited.
Therefore,
when people don't understand this doctrine well, they consider that because they mistakenly consider that because phenomena are empty, there's no good and bad, and there's no cause and effect. Therefore, it's said in the Buddhist teaching that to give up the in dependence on this fact, it's said that between giving up a belief in the cause and effect of actions and giving up the doctrine of emptiness, it's better to give up the doctrine of emptiness. The doctrine of emptiness, to give up the doctrine of belief in the cause and effect of actions, in giving up the doctrine of emptiness, it's better to give up the doctrine of emptiness. Because it's so important to have a belief to be able to posit, or to have a belief in and be able to posit the cause and effects of actions, there arose many, there were presented many different, in many different interpretations of emptiness in the Madhyamaka in Chittimatra schools. In some systems of tenets, it's accepted that phenomena do inherently exist. And the reason why this is said in some systems of tenets is that it's so important to accept the cause and effect of actions. And without it, some people can't believe in the cause and effect of actions. And just as children must first go to primary school before going to the college or university, They proceed on to the higher levels of education based on the lower levels. Therefore, it is independence on having gained ascertainment with respect to the cause and effect of actions that later the profound view is ascertained. If one thought that because phenomena are empty, then there's no good and bad and so forth, then even if one were repeating the word emptiness 1,000 times, one would be moving farther and farther from it. Therefore, a person who has a great interest in emptiness should pay a great deal of attention to the cause and effect of actions. This is the presentation of the practice of wisdom. And there are many distinctive features with respect to the unified practice of concentration and wisdom in the tantra or mantra vehicle. And I won't explain these tonight. So I'll pray for everyone. That's it for tonight.
Thank you very much.